Hi, I'm Johnny.
And I'm Chachi.
We're Get In Here Ministries. And you know, Chachi and I, we couldn't be more excited about the idea of teamwork.
And today we're going to take the idea of teamwork and paint you a beautiful picture through the medium of music. Take it away, Johnny.
Okay. Boom.
You know, hearing Johnny sing by himself is rather putrid and boring. It's amazing what happens when you add others to the mix. Check this out.
You know, through modern technology, we're even able to do this. I'll tell you, though, about teamwork. You know, it's less about me and more about we. Let me kick a harmony.
Hi there. We all know the old saying that there's no I in team, but there's also no selfish hypocrisy in team either. Let me throw a dato in the mix.
Dato, dato, dato.
You know, when people say no man is an island, I used to think, of course no man is a piece of land surrounded by a body of water. But then I realized what they mean. I think I get it.
Somebody once said that none of us is as smart as all of us. And I don't really know what that means, but I know I like it. Now watch me break out something special.
You know, I think we've made some pretty good points about teamwork and the value therein of it.
And if teamwork were a person, I'd love them as all get out.
I think we made some headway on
it. I love
that.
It.
Pretty good.
Man, that's awesome.
Nice.
I love it.
You know what I'm saying?
I love it when
you guys are good.
Like
yeah.
You know what I mean by that. Right.
Good morning. I love those guys. Before we get rolling this morning, if you want to be turning to Ephesians chapter 4. Just one last reminder about our men's event coming up this Saturday. If you have not signed up to be a part of that, please see Ron or myself or email us pretty quickly. We'd be glad to add you to the list and make you a part of that. And also, if you'd like to help out with the food, there is a sign-up sheet on the table at the back for that, and we'd be glad to have any help with that. Ephesians chapter 4. Another quick reminder, in case you're visiting with us this morning, we're glad to have you here. Or if you weren't here last week, we're glad to have you back. We are doing 6 weeks on I Am a Church Member, which is a book by Tom Rainer. Tom Rainer is a church expert, does a lot of blogging and writing about churches and the dynamics of churches and how churches grow and how they also do a good job of not growing sometimes and things that we can learn from that. And we had about a dozen or 15 copies back here of the book last week, and they're all gone. So either someone's humoring me, or you guys are reading those books, which is great. As you finish those, if you want to bring them back and put them out there so people can read that, that would be great. But we will be talking about these things for the next few weeks, and I think the book is a good reinforcement of that. I know I've heard a couple people that already read it during the week and really appreciated the thoughts that are in there. We're going to take each of the main thoughts during these weeks and talk about them, with the exception of next week, because we'll have our guest speaker here with us, and I'm not going to make him fit in the middle of our series, so he's going to do something different. But this week, we're going to talk about being a unifying church member. I am a unifying church member, so there actually was some purpose beyond laughing at those guys to see that video, which is to remind us that teams work well together when they're working as a team. And I would imagine most of us at this point in life have had experiences where that has been true because the team has worked together the way that it should. And we've had other experiences where it was not true because of how the team worked together. I don't know about you, but when I was in school, one of my least favorite things to hear when I would come into class was, "I'm now going to give you a group assignment." I hated those a lot. Because at least all the way through about 6th or 7th grade, I was intelligent. I was the smart kid in class. I did well on tests. I turned my things in on time. I was a good student. Somewhere around junior high, that started to fade a little bit. But there, leading up to 6th, 7th grade, I did pretty well with things. And as luck or whatever you may think would always have it, we would have these group or things where we would pair off into two or three people, and it would always be me and a couple people that struggled in school. And I don't mean to speak ill of you if you struggled in school, because I caught up with you when I got to college. I understand. But when you're the guy who's doing all the work for the group assignment, it's frustrating. It is frustrating to be the one that you feel like this all begins and ends with me. It's frustrating when I think back to the sixth grade and the assignment we did where we wrote a report on Japan. And I worked and worked at that thing, and the other guy who wrote the other half of it, it looked interesting, to say the least. There were very few words that went beyond four or five letters. They were repeating a lot throughout the, and a lot, by the way, was the one that repeated quite a bit, repeated over and over throughout the paper, and we got the grade back, and the teacher had the kindness of grading both halves, but then merging them together so you could know who did what on the paper. And I had an A, and Michael had a D. And merged together, we had a magical C, which in sixth grade was the first C I had run across in life. And I was mad and sad, and my mom was even more mad when she saw it. And that was my introduction into teamwork when it came to team assignments. And it's tough sometimes, isn't it? Because we get on these teams and we have different ideas of what a team is to be. We have different ideas of how a team is to operate. We have different ideas of who contributes what, of how far my opinion goes. And teamwork makes things a little more difficult at times. We've heard in America over and over and over again, if you want the job done right, do it yourself. And that is an easy way to go about life sometimes. It's a lot easier because you know if the job goes wrong, who's going to get blamed? You are, or I am. And so you take this responsibility and want to do it on your own, and we have been trained, at least when it comes to church, in totally the wrong way. Because teamwork shouldn't be something we dread, it shouldn't be something that we look at and think, it would be so much easier if I could just do it myself. It should be something that we embrace. It should be something where we desire and want everybody to be a part and operate as part of this team, and that's what we're going to look at today. Beginning in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. Paul writes, "As a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace." A lot of simple-sounding things on their own that he throws in there, but when you put it all together, it's really something special. If we could have humility, if we could have patience, if we could bear with each other in love, then we could find this unity that is in the bond of the Spirit and the bond of peace. I will be a unifying member, and membership in a unifying way means we are known for our love for one another. Now, I don't know what we're known for, and I don't know that we completely know what we're known for. There are little bits and pieces of things that we're known for. I was talking to somebody about the youth rally the other day, and they said, other groups know that our food is really good at the youth rally. And then they come here, they're excited about, they're going to eat well for that weekend. And I thought, it's okay to be known for that. We're probably known for, as people drive by, being the church that's there on the Beltline that people can see, and they wonder what this little wooded area over here is about. We may be known for the path from North Kinsey to Walmart. We may be known for a lot of different things. But I want you to think a little bit this morning about we're supposed to be known for our love for one another, which begins with Jesus in John chapter 13. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Is that how everyone knows we're his disciples? Is that what people think about when they think of the Eugene Church of Christ? Now, I will admit to you that some of the things that will come to mind with people are probably not fair. Some of the things that come to mind with people are the things that make us different, because that's the way that we tend to do things. I noticed we went to NCU for the church fair, and Mike Duffield and I were out there with a table in the heat, if you can remember all the way back to August when it was hot, in the heat with chocolate quickly melting on our table because we wanted to have something to hand out to hungry college children and be known for our food, I guess. But as we were as we're sitting there at the table, and people would come up and we'd introduce ourselves and they would say, tell us about your church. I noticed a lot of times Mike would say, we're an a cappella congregation. Why? Because that's what makes us different. And if you walk in here and you're not used to that, it would be something kind of unusual for you. I will admit, getting the video for this morning, I was so excited that something I didn't have to worry about, there's music in it or not music in it or any of that kind of stuff, it's just there. And I look at us, and that's one of the things that makes us unique. So there might be people, if they come to visit, they would say, oh, that's the church that didn't have instruments up front, didn't have a band, didn't have an organ. There might be that we are known because of our people and what they do. It might be that we are known because history here. It might be we are known because this building's been here a long time and another building was downtown for a long time before that. There are any number of things that we may be known for, but Jesus says here that we are supposed to be known for our love. And I think all of us probably know someone we could describe in this way. We know someone that when you see their excitement about life, you can tell that it's their excitement about life is what you know them by. You see people that their smile is what you know them by. You see people on the other end of the spectrum that their lack of smile and excitement about life is what you know them by. But as a church, are we known by love? And what does that look like if we are? Do people find us to be loving people or do they not? And for some of us, who that may not be our default, we have to be reminded. I was looking back a couple months ago at a picture of my high school chorus, which is frightening to begin with, but I look at this picture of my high school chorus, and it was hysterical to look at this picture because everyone in the picture was doing something else. It was between two songs. Obviously, the picture had been taken. And so I saw people scratching their noses. I saw people hands in pockets. I saw people fixing their hair. And it's funny when one person's doing it, but when 30 are doing it at the same time. This could not have been a more good planned out picture, and I was reminded immediately of what the chorus director used to tell us all the time, which is, don't touch your face while you're up there. Try to smile as you're singing the song, unless it's a sad song, and then don't smile as much. Make some eye contact with the audience. Do all these different things. And I remember thinking, what's the point of all that? And then I saw that picture. And I realized we portray something to people. And the question for us this morning is, what are we portraying to people? If people know you in life, and then somewhere along the way find out that you attend here, is that going to make them want to know what here is more about? Are they going to want to come here and see what the Eugene Church of Christ is based on what they see in you in life? Or will they see you and me in life and find out that we're a part of this and think, I'm going to keep on driving by that building and not stopping? Because the flip side of they'll know we're Christians by our love is, what are they going to know if we are not loving? What are they going to know if we're not loving the people who are difficult to love, which is oftentimes me or you? What are they going to think about God if we're not being loving people? Secondly, membership means that we avoid and put a stop to gossip and other negative talk. Got real uncomfortable all of a sudden, didn't it? We don't like to talk about this, which is funny. The gossip part, we're okay. We don't want to talk about gossip, ironically. We've got to not only take part in it, we've got to not only ignore it when it's around us, but we've got to make some sort of an effort to put a stop to it. In Romans chapter 1, we have everything going haywire in culture, which may be the way you feel some days. And as the chapter carries on here, it says, they have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. And immediately, you have some sort of imagery come to mind, or you might have a list of what those things would be. And I would guess that we will, as we did last week, again this week, turn on the news, and we will see things that we could describe in this way. Whether it's terror attacks that are going on somewhere, whether it's just a complete lack of regard for human life that's going on somewhere else, whether it's just selfishness that we see all around us. They become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice, and we're all on board so far. And then we find out they are gossips. And if you would describe gossip in this way, we're in a heap of trouble because we enter a world, probably before we even walk out the door here, that is full of this. People talking about other people. People who are excited to have news about other people. People are excited to tell you the dirt on other people. Isn't it fun to know something that somebody else doesn't know? And isn't it almost more fun than that to be the one to tell somebody and they get to see all the things that you know that they don't know? We get caught up in this. They're gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They have no understanding, no fidelity, no love, no mercy. Bad people. And I think most of us would look ourselves in the mirror and think to ourselves, really not a bad person. I try. I'm here on Sunday. I try to do the right things. I try to be a good neighbor. I try to be a good worker or a good boss, depending on the position you're in. I try to be understanding. I try to be patient. And yet, when we find gossip in the midst of all these things, it's a struggle. But as long as we are a group that is going to talk about others within our group, we don't have teamwork. We don't have unity. We don't have what it is that God desires of us. James puts it this way. The tongue is also a fire or a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body. It sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and it is itself set on fire by hell. Pretty direct, pretty negative. The words that we say have impact. They get away from us pretty quickly. And we see this nowhere more clearly in our world today than the words people use online. Whether it be Twitter or Facebook, or if you ever read a news story online and make the poor judgment call of scrolling down to the comments, people are angry and bitter, and our words matter. And the words we use when we talk about each other matter. Are we being positive? Are we being cutting? Are we speaking when we should not be speaking? Peter puts it this way. For whoever would love life and see good days must keep their tongue from evil and their lips from deceitful speech. It is something that we must take the effort to control. And there are any number of things in life like this that we know we have to make an effort to get better at, and this is one of them. And so to be a unifying church member, it begins at who are we talking about, how are we talking about them, are we encouraging or are we cutting, what is it that we're doing? Third, membership means we specialize in forgiveness and in unity. Are you holding a grudge this morning? Somebody wronged you and you're waiting for that apology and you're just sitting there mad, waiting. And you see them and you look across the way and you think they still don't get it. They still don't understand what they've done to me. That's not unifying church membership, is it? Unifying membership is laying those things down. In the high school class this morning, we talked about the prodigal son. And we talked about if your child came to you, and you can think about this for a minute as parents or grandparents, if your child came to you and said, I want my inheritance and I want it now, and depending on your child, you can imagine how this goes. Some of them just demanding, others of them rationalizing, others of them coming and putting together a great lawyer-like case of why it should happen, and convincing you why it should happen, and what you might think during all that, and how many of us would think, this is not going to go well. Even if I give in and do this, for whatever crazy reason I might, it's not going to go well. They're going to blow it, it's all going to be gone, and then they're going to be with nothing. And then what do? Do they come crying home to me, and then I give them the big I told you so? And you might imagine yourself either desperately wanting them to come back, or sitting on the porch with your arms folded, waiting, frustrated, upset. And I wonder how many of us approach forgiveness in that kind of way. Do we approach forgiveness as something that you really got to earn that with me? Or is it something that we give out freely? In Matthew, Jesus says, "For if you forgive other people when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins." And we know they're connected. We understand that it's connected the way I forgive and the way that I'm to be forgiven. But we don't operate that way a lot of the time. We operate in a very different kind of way. In Colossians, Paul writes, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive each other. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you." Into unity, we must find forgiveness. We must have the ability to let go of those grudges and forgive those who are around us. Our church membership is a unified membership. As we close, if you want to turn over to Colossians chapter 3, we were just looking at verses 12 and 13. But in verse 14, it says, and over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. It all circles back around to love every time, doesn't it? If we have love, these things are who we want to be. I'm a lot more patient if my kids have been the ones to go out and blow that inheritance and come back than I might be if somebody else's kids. And then we all want to get together and talk about it and what they've done. But love stops us from that. Over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. I want you to think of these words. And this is not a repeat after me kind of thing, but think this through with me. I am a church member. I will seek to be a source of unity in my congregation. Now, wherever you may be, with everything we've said to this point, I think a lot of us get very excited when we make it to neutral, if that makes any sense. When I read about love my enemies, I get pretty excited when I reach don't hate my enemies. If I could just get on neutral level ground with my enemies, then I'm pretty accomplished at things. When I look at something like unity, as long as I'm not stirring up trouble, I begin to feel pretty good about myself. Things are going pretty well. And there's this thing I really want this way, but I'm just gonna hold back. I'm not gonna say much about it. I'll just kind of even keel. But I'm gonna be a source of unity, which means you will see disunity going on around you. If you're visiting with us this morning, I don't want to let you in on our secrets sometimes, but you will, if you are here long enough and visit enough times, you will find disunity. And it's not because we're any more of a mess than anybody else is a mess, but it's what church is. It's why we talk about this morning. Because any church you walk into, there is somebody not happy with something. Roy painted a wall out here. He didn't pick the colors, it's not his fault. But he painted a wall out here the other day, and there will be people that walk in and don't notice. I watched that happen this morning. People just walk in, go on with life, and don't notice the reddish wall. There will be people that walk in, they kind of look at it, a little bit unsure what to think. People walk in and immediately, who did that? Who painted that wall? There will be other people that walk in and say, that wall should have been that color all along. That is the best color I have ever seen. And then there will be all kinds of people in between all of those. We have opinions about everything. We're funny that way. And it doesn't turn off just because we've walked into the church building. It doesn't turn off just because we've gotten together for lunch or coffee somewhere else. We have moments of disunity. And what we are called to be, instead of people that just try to stay at neutral with that, is to be a source of unity. So I will tell you, if you walked in and you saw the color and you thought, what's that all about? A group of people, not one person, a group of people got together and they looked at more colors than you can shake a stick at, or a stirring paint stick at, and they saw these colors and said, you know, let's put that color there and we'll see what happens. We like the idea of some color in here, let's put it there. And they as a unified group chose to, or I should say we, I was in the meeting. We as a unified group chose to put that color there. And so if you come to me and say, what's up with that color? That's probably the answer you will get from me. This group of people got together and we know some people are going to love it, some people are going to hate it, some people are not going to care. And that's kind of the way things go. But I'm going to try to be a unifying church member. And that could be any number of things around this place or any number of things that we do. If you hear someone bad-mouthing me, first of all, clearly they're wrong. But secondly, if you hear that, I would hope you would say to that person, I don't know if there's anything good to come of this. Have you talked to Brian about what this issue is? And I pick me out because it's easy to pick on me because I'm me, but it could be any one of us. You hear somebody bad-mouthing one of our elders or one of our teachers or anybody in here, just another member sitting in here. You don't want to not only be a part of that, but you would like to gently, by the way, correct that. Not in their face, not with a red face, not yelling and screaming, not all that, but gently to say, this is not how we act in love. This is not what we do. And I wouldn't do this to you, and I don't want you to do this to me or to anyone else. And let's try to get to a godly resolution here. I will be a source of unity. And if there comes a day where you're gone and we are talking about you and the life you lived in here, and we're going to lay you to rest that day, how great would it be if people said about you, they were a source of unity in the Eugene Church of Christ? And they will be missed because they were a source of unity in this church. And believe me, if you are a source of unity in this church, when you're gone, you will be missed. Because that's what we need. I will be a source of unity in my congregation. I know there are no perfect ministers. Hate to let you in on this. We're not perfect. You probably already know that, I'm sure. But I know there's no perfect ministers, no staff. Darlene and Denise are great. At the same time, there will occasionally be a typo in the bulletin. There might be an announcement that is missed, somebody's birthday forgotten. They do not have it out for you or your event. They make mistakes. And it's tough when that happens. But we mess up. It's what we do. There's no perfect ministers, no perfect staff, and I hate to tell you this, no perfect you either. Until we're all gone from here. And with God in heaven, there is no perfect church member either. Neither am I. I will not be a source of gossip or dissension. So not only will you be unifying, but you most definitely will not be a source of the things that cause disunity. And some of this will take effort for some of us to get out of it. I sat with a group of ministers one time. We were talking about a guy in town that ran a business. And everything we were saying was true. He's a bad guy. He's just a bad guy. And as we talked about him, and we were just feeling really good about us and talking about him, one of the ministers stopped, said, you know, guys, I think what we're doing here is wrong. We were gossiping about this guy, and I think we should stop and we should pray about him. And I remember feeling about that big, because I thought to myself, he is completely right. And it doesn't matter that everything I've just said is true, he's right. And we should stop and we should pray. And maybe that's the challenge to us. That thing or person we're about to gossip about or we're going to cause some kind of issue over, what if instead we stopped and prayed about that? What if we genuinely prayed for that person and their relationship with God and our relationship with each other, that those things would get better instead of just talking about? I will not be a source of gossip or dissension. One of the greatest contributions I can make is to do all I can in God's power to help keep the church in unity. And then this is what really gets me. For the sake of the gospel. We don't think of it that way a lot of times. We think of unity as a me and you issue. Or honestly, we usually think of unity as a you and you issue. It's you and your problems with you, and I'm not involved at all. I'm perfect in how I do things. It's not just an issue between us or between you. It is an issue that causes people to hesitate when they hear about the gospel. Because everything about Jesus sounds great, and if you can get to a point of faith where you actually believe he did all the stuff that we read about in Scripture and that he was killed unjustly, but then overcame death and then ascended into heaven, and then here we all are because of that, and the things that we just did at this table a while ago are true, if you can get past all of that and the amount of faith it takes to get through all of it can be undone by a couple people in here bickering. Because what people see at that point is the same thing they see Monday through Saturday. It's all the same. And if it's all the same, then why put my time into that? Why put my money into that? Why go be a part of that? Why listen to that guy talk every week? Why? And it's the unity we have, the things that we do, or the disunity we have and the lack of love we have, it affects how the gospel spreads. When I look at the fact that we're still here 2,000 years later based on 12 guys who got this thing rolling in the book of Acts that we're studying on Sunday mornings blows my mind some days. Because when I look at those 12 guys were a mess too. Those 12 guys had things about their personalities that would not want you to have them in their in your group project. You would not want them on your team. You would want easier to work with guys on your team. And because of what those guys did for that several years in the book of Acts, we are still here. We can undo things very quickly by being disunified. What if we were unified at the level that we read about in Scripture? How much further could the church go? How much larger could it be? How much more of a force in our world could it be? And that's what we need to be thinking about when we think of unity. Not just getting along with each other, but the effect it has on the gospel. The effect it has on whether souls are going to be saved, whether people that we love or people that live around us are going to be in heaven with us, or whether they will have not truly gotten the message because they were too busy looking at how we lived. And it just didn't seem to match up with what we were saying. Let's not be those people this morning. Let's begin, as we talked about last week, to be functioning church members, people that do instead of people that just show up. And secondly, let's be unifying church members. And you will be presented with opportunities to do that. You will be presented with opportunities to be the peacemaker, with opportunities to stop the gossip, with opportunities to say things that are encouraging, and to build a better team here at the Eugene Church. As we close this morning, which I think I said about 10 minutes ago, as we close this morning, I hope we can each look at ourselves. I hope we can each look at ourselves and realize that we all, as good as we may be at this, probably could do a little better. Or we might need to look at ourselves and realize, I'm the problem sometimes, and I need to do better about that. I need to be unifying. I need to, even when it's true, not engage in the talking about somebody else. I need to, when I have a problem or an issue with somebody, not to go to someone else and talk about that person, but to go to them and to try to solve it. I need to be a unifying church member. And this morning, if you are not, and we can help you in some way, whether it's just to become a member for the first time. And it's tough. We're not making it sound all that attractive over these weeks, and I get that. I hope we're making it sound real over these weeks. I hope you will understand that we acknowledge that we do not have it all figured out, that we are not perfect people, and that we want to grow and do better too, and we would love to be on that road with you to do that. So if you'd like to become a part of the church and be baptized into Christ, we would love to see you do that. Or if there's something we can pray about or something you would like for the church to know about, whatever needs you may have, please come while we stand and sing.